Every Wednesday, we try to have a program that deals with the environment and the outdoors. Usually have a guest expert on to talk about a specific topic. Today, we're going to approach it a little differently. We're certainly staying with the outdoors and our wildlife situation, but in the form of a roundtable discussion today about wildlife and nature here in Wisconsin. I'm Larry Mueller, and we have three guests for you today. Dean Bortz, editor of the Wisconsin Outdoor News. Dean, are you there?
Yes, Larry, I'm here.
Wonderful. Thank you for joining us. Pat Durkin, freelance writer and editor and president of the Wisconsin Outdoor Communicators Association. Pat, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Larry.
And Tim Isley, with me in the studio, full-time freelance outdoor writer and photographer. And Tim, great to have you here as well.
Thank you. Great to be here, Larry.
We have a lot of topics today that we can talk about, and I hope you'll be joining in the conversation with us as we visit along. Here are some areas. We can talk about maybe about climate change. We can talk about the Department of Natural Resources. How do you feel about the new managed forest law? What are your nature and wildlife questions? These guys, well, let's see. I'm just thinking about it right now. If I add up the years, we probably got 100 years, haven't we?
Oh, Larry, you might not want to add up those years just yet.
Oh, man. I tell you what, Dean, Pat and Tim have both written and write for Wisconsin Outdoor News. For those who aren't familiar with it, I mean, if you want to kind of know what's going on in the outdoors of Wisconsin, you turn to Wisconsin Outdoor News. But tell our listeners about the publication.
Well, Wisconsin Outdoor News has been around for about 24 years now. It's a twice monthly paper. Comes out every other week, and we cover just about every topic anybody who hunts, fishes, traps, or has an interest in air and water would like to know about. We have compared to other states in the country, we have some of the best outdoor writers around working for Outdoor News, and boy, they bring their knowledge and experience to the publication and then also to the readers.
Yeah, it's an amazing publication. I really appreciate reading it, and of course appreciate seeing Pat's byline and Tim's byline in it, as well as the many other great outdoor writers. And I think we posted a link up on our Facebook page, so at the Larry Mueller Show. So we've got that. You know, I'm thinking about all the different things that we can talk about today. We've got organizations, we've got the DNR, we've got environmental issues, we've got hunting and fishing issues like chronic wasting disease, or we can talk about fishing and the season opener and walleyes for tomorrow. What are you hearing? Pat, maybe I'll turn to you first here. What are you hearing from your readers? What's your sense of people's thoughts on what's going on in the outdoors and the environment?
It's been interesting this spring, Larry. The chronic wasting disease, I think we're finally seeing people statewide getting more concerned about it. It's been an issue now for 15 years, and I think this is the first time I've really seen people, sending me questions from around the state, not assuming this thing is going to stay down in southern Wisconsin.
Yeah, I think I've heard a lot more about it. Tim, what about you?
Well, I especially have to say that the two legislators who wrote to the governor, I take my hat off to them that they wrote to the governor to put his feet to the fire to say, look, the Department of Natural Resources is not doing enough. Early on, they started to try and keep the disease confined. I mean, there's no cure for it. But you've got to do something rather than letting it go statewide. And the two legislators who wrote to the governor and then met with the governor, and now it sounds like the governor is actually going to be asking the Department of Natural Resources to do something. I mean, I think chronic wasting disease is one of the biggest problems facing this state. And if it spreads statewide and if it goes, it gets so much bigger, who's going to want to hunt deer? And what's going to happen? And the whole industry. So I think that's one of the biggest problems we face. And I'm really pleased. And with Pat's reporting, Pat's articles have been wonderful.
Yeah, you've done a great job on those on your articles, Pat. Dean, are you hearing the similar things?
I think Pat's pretty much got it dialed in there. He's been doing the brunt of the work on the CWD front, tracking statistics and digging into numbers and talking to people. And when he says that it's becoming a more of a statewide issue now, or at least people are becoming more aware of it on a statewide level, I think he's right. And I think an example of that is the fact that the two legislators, Dano and Milroy, contacted Governor Walker about this and actually appears to have something going. You know, who knows how much and for how long and in what direction, but at least they're talking about it, and Governor Walker is listening to it, at least, you know, for right now, that's what we're seeing. And at the same time, then, you know, we're seeing, I think there's a May 4th sort of an action day being called by Whitetails of Wisconsin, sort of probably in reaction to Milroy and Dano's efforts. There's going to be a lot more attention focused on CWD here in the next couple of weeks, I think, and maybe even going forward from there.
Yeah, I think Whitetails on Wisconsin, what is it? They have a March on Madison, they're calling it?
Well, I don't know if they're necessarily calling it. That's how I described it a couple of times here. It's a more of an action day, I think, is probably more accurate. They're asking their members. Wisconsin, Whitetails of Wisconsin, WOW, is, for those who aren't aware, is a... it's the group that represents Wisconsin deer farmers. And I'm not sure, and there's probably a difference between deer farmers and game farms as far as, you know, whether it's a shooting preserve or whether they're raising whitetails for different reasons. So I'm not sure if WOW covers the shooting preserves, but the folks who are raising deer in Wisconsin are asking their members to get to Madison on May 4th and talk to legislators. So I'm not sure if that's a reaction to Dano and Milroy going to Madison to get something going or what, but it's coming on the heels of that effort.
Mm-hmm.
I would think that that would be a reaction to that, and I think deer farms are something that there needs to be a lot of concern about, and nobody knows where chronic wasting disease came from, but there's a lot of concern, and certainly we've seen it on some of these deer farms, so I think this is something that people are going to need to pay some really close attention to.
Yeah, and you know, other states are I think Illinois in particular has been very active, and in keeping the actually just shooting the deer, and it seems to have been effective, at least in slowing it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. You know, Illinois isn't quite the situation we have in Wisconsin. You know, the habitat that they're dealing with down there is a little more open, not so many large woodlots like southern Wisconsin has, so it's a little bit easier to target the deer in that region, but still, there's no doubt they've made a concerted effort, whereas our effort has been, really, you know, when people talk about recent efforts in Wisconsin to be more passive in our approach towards CWD, my contention for many years is that we got passive pretty quickly, starting about 2006 in that era, in that time period. So it's not like this current passive we're on suddenly materialized. We've been on it. We've been pretty passive for about a decade now.
Yeah, and the result has been pretty much an expansion of CWD in across counties, many counties.
Correct.
Yeah. Harold in River Fall, and by the way, if you'd like to join in as you listen to this conversation, we're sort of on chronic wasting, but certainly we can take up a variety of other issues as well relating to the outdoors. Give a call at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. And email us at talk@wpr.org or go ahead and post on our Facebook page. Our Facebook page title, The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Let's take a call from Harold in River Falls. Harold, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Today?
Yeah.
I'd like to comment about the chronic wasting disease. I know he's been talking about it. And I think the thing that kind of got this started was some of the questions that came up in some of the Conservation Congress hearings in April. I know several of the counties had resolutions passed for double fencing for deer farms and hunting preserves, and even some, I think, resolutions even went as far as hoping that they would get banned in Wisconsin. So I think maybe these assemblymen got a little bit of pressure from the Conservation Congress, which I think is a good thing.
Yeah. Comment, Pat? Turn to you.
Okay. Well, no matter where the pressure comes from, it's good that we're talking about it. I guess that's where I would start with this. Now, as far as double fencing, I guess if I were a deer farm owner, I would want double fencing. You know, I would want that. I wouldn't feel like the state's forcing it on me. If I have that investment of deer and elk, you know, do you want these animals being in nose-to-nose contact with outside deer when we have this, what is now a very large reservoir of sick deer in southwestern Wisconsin, and we have not tested this state aggressively for well over a decade, more like 12, 13 years since we did a, perhaps 15 years since we did a comprehensive statewide analysis of where we are with chronic wasting disease. So to me, I don't think it's possible that we're going to outlaw deer farms. I mean, I just don't see the commitment in our state to make that kind of a payoff. We're going to be buying out all these deer operations, deer and elk operations around the state. It's a very expensive proposition. I mean, we've looked at that in the past, and if we didn't want to do it then, I just don't see the resolve in Wisconsin to do something like that. I guess I would support it, but I'd be skeptical we could ever get that through the legislature.
Oh, interesting. Thanks, Harold. Mike and Mount Pleasant has something, I think, kind of relating. Mike, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Yeah, I think I'm extend off of the past caller's remarks. And, you know, really, my take on it, and I'm a former Conservation Congress member, and I used to head up, was chair of one of their committees, and I left the Conservation Congress or refused to stand again for election because of what I saw as being a walk away from professional wildlife game resource management and going towards whatever the political hot button issue of the day is and whoever can get in front of their legislature and scream the loudest. Chronic wasting disease is a perfect example. The stuff that's had gone on in the state of Wisconsin is a perfect example where a relatively small number of businesses, being game farms, have managed to have an outsized influence against what the total economic benefit, the deer, you know, a good clean deer herd and deer hunting and other game management things has as an economic impact in the state. A relatively small number, a handful of deer farmers, are running the show when it comes to dealing with chronic wasting disease. Also, you know, this could be extended into other areas. Same thing, we had a consensus agreement on phosphorus in the state of Wisconsin, and that had inputs from farmers and commercial and residential and cities, municipalities, etc. And then essentially one of the first things that happened when the new administration came in is they threw most of those consensus agreements out. And I don't understand why, because there was a consensus. We had agreement with all the parties. So there's a number of these issues, which, you know, and I could go on and on and on, that all come down to if you are going to have a science-based and professional management that's based on facts, then you need to let some of these decisions, regulatory and otherwise, sit with the people that have the background and training to be able to make some of those calls and get it out of the legislators' hands, who are reacting to the squeaky wheels. They're not reacting to facts as science and experience, who I might add, have always guided what used to be, and I fear that it's going away, used to be one of the models in the U.S. for effective resource management.
Mike, I thank you very much for calling. I'll get some comments here. Tim, you first, maybe.
Thanks, Larry. Yeah, I really appreciate Mike's comments. And I think, first of all, going back to one of the basic tenets of the North American model of wildlife conservation in this country is that science is the basis for wildlife policy. And that's so important. And that's what we used to have with the Department of Natural Resources. And one of the things that I think we need so much is to keep the science within the DNR. And, of course, here we've seen where the legislature eliminated 20 positions in science during this last session of the legislature. We also need a Department of Natural Resources which is independent. And at the Conservation Congress meetings, I was so pleased because one of the questions there was support for allowing the Natural Resources Board to choose the Secretary of the DNR. That won overwhelmingly by over 3,000 votes to only 400 against. So to get an independence, the Natural Resources Board is a citizen board of citizens from throughout the state of Wisconsin, and they used to hire the secretary, and they used to set the policy for the Department of Natural Resources and then allow the scientists to manage that. And we've lost that. And unfortunately, we have very many good legislators, but legislators represent people. And if people want to put in high-capacity wells, if they want to shoot 10 deer a year, if they want to do this, they want to do that, legislators want to represent their people. But we need somebody to talk on behalf of the natural resources and to manage the natural resources. We've got to be concerned about 20, 30 years from now, what our kids are going to have. And that's the thing that we need here in the state of Wisconsin. I agree with Mike.
Yeah. Thank you so much for those comments. Tim, Dean, a comment?
I would just go to the front part of what Mike was talking about there about the CWD stuff. I'm not real familiar with where we were at with the phosphorus stuff that he was talking about there. But you know, as far as the game farm thing and CWD, you know, we're gonna never know for sure where CWD came from or how it got here. But I don't think it came from Wyoming or Colorado on foot.
No.
That's just my thought.
Yeah.
And but it's here. We have to deal with it. I think it would be great if we could stop pointing fingers and start looking at solutions, possible solutions. And I know we've been doing that for a long time, or trying to do that. There's also been a lot of friction between game farm owners or deer farm owners and folks on the outside of the fence trying to figure out how to solve this problem. And it sure be nice to, if we could take this now, since there's a little bit of discussion going on, and move forward with some sort of working plan or good ideas that, you know, we can try working on.
Yeah. Talking today about a whole host of wildlife issues and nature issues with our three guests. We got a roundtable discussion going with outdoor writers Tim Isley and Patrick Durkin, Dean Bortz as well. Dean is editor of Wisconsin Outdoor News. You can join in with your own 2 cents worth here at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up at 2 o'clock today, Kathleen Dunn will be talking with a local bookseller who is going to share suggestions for great books to read this spring. That's at 2 o'clock. Right now, though, we're taking a look at outdoor issues here in Wisconsin with our three guests, Dean Bortz of Wisconsin Outdoor News, who is the editor there, Pat Durkin, and Tim Isley, our freelance writers and editors. Pat's the president of the Wisconsin Outdoor Communicators Association as well. So they have a lot of experience to share, and it's fun to have a chance to talk with them. Let's take some more calls here. Again, the number is 1-800-642-1234. And Chad in Green Bay, thank you for calling. Hello.
Thank you. I just see a link between chronic wasting disease and a few, more than a few years back, there was a particularly bad winter where the DNA was giving the deer some type of protein concentrate to try to stimulate the population. And then it turned out that they were using brain matter and spinal fluids and all the good stuff that caused mad cow disease. And, you know, the symptoms are almost identical. This seemed like it popped out of nowhere, and now it's taking over. It just seems like another case of intervention. Good intentions led to, you know, a bad mix of
results. I am not familiar with that. Pat, are you familiar with that?
I don't think there was ever any effort by the DNR or any kind of agency to supplement the deer's diet with any kind of protein. But, you know, there was a time, you know, back 20, 30 years ago where what went into some of these mineral blocks that people could buy at, you know, livestock places, whatever it might be, and put those out. There was a time where some of that was not regulated very carefully, and things like animal byproducts were being used. Now, whether that is what helps spread the disease, you know, it goes back to what Dean was saying. We'll never know for certain. I mean, the stuff with the game farms, too, you know, you look at the area of southwestern Wisconsin where this disease popped up, there is not that traditional bullseye disease scenario down there where you can look at a game farm, a deer farm, elk farm, whatever it might be, and see a whole ring of sick deer popping up in the area around it. This hasn't happened in Wisconsin. So it's really frustrating for everyone involved who was investigating this years ago to figure out where it came from. But the protein blocks was one possible idea that got thrown out there. And, you know, but when you look at this disease and what we've learned about it in the years since, I mean, this is a disease where the prions that apparently trigger this disease can be passed along through plants. They can be carried along in dirt. You know, so who knows where that kind of stuff goes to. You know, if a coyote eats a dead deer that was sick with it, they could potentially go trotting off, and coyotes sometimes trot long distances. Then when they defecate and leave the prion there, it might spread that way. So it's anyone's guess where this disease came from, but, you know, I just don't know of any kind of effort by the DNR or any other agency to actually go out and try to help the deer with the supplemental feeding. That just isn't something that agencies do.
Jay in Argyle has something for us. Jay, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yes, good morning. Just a kind of a precautionary statement or maybe a hope that when people write or speak or communicate about some of these problems, it seems like we generalize way too much and we say the DNR isn't doing this or the DNR did that or they are doing this or whatever the case is. And for the last several decades, it's not the DNR, and in fact, it may not be anybody in the DNR. If at most it's one or two people, if you were to take somebody that's retired from the DNR and ask them what they should be doing with regard to some of these problems, in no way would they tell you that what they should be doing is what is being done. We've gotten into a system where, and you touched on a little bit, you know, it's not coming from the DNR, certainly even the top managers in the DNR, but from the legislators, and in some cases, most cases, those people are being, you know, stifled by their own party, so that you could probably count on one hand some of the reasons for the problems in the environment, and most of those counts would not come from the DNR. So when we report on those things or write about them or talk about them, and we shouldn't say, you know, this is the DNR isn't doing this or they're not doing that. It's probably not the DNR at all, and it's probably not even the secretary, but it's much higher up than that, or it's somebody with a great deal of power or a good set of teeth to chew on the governor's ear.
Yeah, yeah. Dean, a comment on that?
Let me go back. Let me back the truck up here just a little bit. Go back to Chad and Green Bay first.
Okay.
And I just want to add to what Pat said, and maybe make it a little bit stronger statement. The DNR does not sponsor any feeding operations in the winter for deer currently, and even for a long time. I can't remember exactly what the era would have been when they did feed deer, but have been probably been back in the 30s or 40s. But since then, Wisconsin's DNR does not espouse or participate in any sort of winter feeding program for deer. So let's get that one out of here. It's that doesn't happen. Now, deer do get fed, but they're fed by private parties in their backyards and stuff like that. So as far as that being an avenue for CWD, no, that wasn't it. Let's see, in the last caller...
Had to do with blaming the DNR for a lot of things the DNR has no control over.
Oh, yeah, and that's true. Yeah, I mean, it's easy to beat up on the DNR because, that's everybody knows the agency. It may be, let's say, for instance, on, let's say, just turned to Wapaka County for a minute there, and everybody was beating up on the DNR for proposing an antlerless only season in Wapaka County. Well, it was actually the CDAC committee that came up with the idea that sure is linked to DNR in a way, but there's different groups here involved, and instead of people taking the time to figure out exactly which group they're talking about, it's easy to blame the DNR. Sometimes for good reason, but
yeah. And CDAC, by the way, is County Deer Advisory Council. Tim, anything from you here on this?
Well, I think it is true that legislators sometimes tie the hands of the Department of Natural Resources, and I think they passed some of the rules which took away the Urnebuck. I mean, they took it out of their hands. The department can't have that. And some of the other things that they've passed, even on baiting and feeding, were some of these changes can't be made now except by the legislators. So we need to have science back in natural resources, and in a strong Department of Natural Resources is what we need. And there again, and a lot of that goes back, I think, to the Natural Resources Board. Having those citizens, I've been very impressed over the years, people like Herb Benke, Christine Thomas, Preston Cole, who was just a recent chair. We've had so many good chairs, so many good citizens on that board, and I really value their decisions in setting the policy for the department. So there's a lot of things that go into it, but having an independent department and having science as the base, I think, is the key.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell one story on sometimes how public perception, about public perception. There's a lake that I camp at and fish muskie at, and people, the other campers, would always complain about how the DNR was netting the muskie out of the lake and taking it somewhere else. And so when I got home, I called the DNR fish manager up there, and he says, "No, we put muskies in the lake every year." Now, he said, "We did net some, but we tagged them, and we were following them and doing research on their habits, so we were in there with nets." So the next year, I'm back up there, and people are bringing this whole story up again. And I said, "Look, I talked to the DNR about this, and explained it, and they said, oh, I don't believe that." So sometimes I would certainly agree that they sometimes get blamed for things that aren't their fault or that they never did, for sure. Bill and
notice that Larry didn't mention what lake that was.
You know, I caught a pretty nice muskie out of that lake. Oh boy, we have Bill in Washburn. Let's go there, Bill. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hello, thank you very much for letting me speak. There was recently a hearing in Washburn on a conditional use permit for another deer farm up here in Bayfield County. This is one of the clean counties. And it was turned down on a vote by 4-1. And I think that's significant. The people up here, well, the hunters and all who are concerned about it, want to keep chronic wasting disease as far away as possible from up here, where so far it has not turned up. And I think one thing that would lead to helping this battle with chronic wasting disease is to get it out from under the Department of Agriculture and put it totally under the responsibility for the DNR. The DNR right now, as far as deer farms are concerned, have a very little responsibility. They pretty much get involved after the fact. And I think a great improvement would be made by giving them the whole bale of hay. That's all I had.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Comet
Tim. We have a guy working on that particular story, Larry, you want to hear a little bit about that.
Yeah, go ahead, Dean.
We have a fellow, retired DNR game warden. He's been mayor of Shell Lake. He's been a lot of things. His name's Dave Zeug, Z-E-U-G. Good guy, works hard, very concerned about the resources. And he had attended that particular meeting. It was a Bayfield County committee meeting, zoning committee meeting. And, yeah, they did vote 4-1 to not allow that deer farm to come into a little town of Ino. I believe it's the Ino one. I know there's being a deer farm being proposed in Ino. The person who applied bought 380 acres, so he has a large investment, and he was hoping to get a deer farm in there. So what we don't know is what's going to happen next. I mean, is that county committee, is that vote going to carry? Is the person going to challenge it? And how do you challenge it? We're trying to figure that out now. Do you challenge it to the county? Could he file a lawsuit? It seems like it might be a very small thing in one way, but in another way, it could be sort of a little precedent-setting thing where, you know.
Yeah.
But then we also have the that pig farm being proposed for Bayfield County, that CAFO, Concentrated Agricultural Feeding Operation. That's in the grist, too, so we'll see how that all pans out. But, yeah, there's a lot of citizens have become aware of these possibilities, and they're becoming involved and making their voices heard.
I think that the caller is right, that the Department of Natural Resources primarily has the only authority is really over fencing and escapes and fences. So that's what the Department of Natural Resources conservation wardens are out there. The rest of the deer farms are the authority of the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. And I think that dates back to some changes maybe a decade ago. In fact, one of the people that I was interested in talking to at some point was Dwayne Johnsrud, who used to be in the legislature, Natural Resources Committee, and he's a farmer from Crawford County, beautiful Crawford County. And I've had some conversations with Dwayne. I'd like to go back and just talk with him. Is moving it from DNR over to ag, was that really a good thing? And I think it's something that I don't know whether it'll ever change, but I think it's a question.
Let's turn to Don in Milwaukee with a little different topic area, I think. Don, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Hello, Larry. Thank you for the program and thank you for your service. I have a question that I don't know if it's been brought up yet or not, but it seems like there's the wetlands right now. Apparently, Scott Walker signed something recently, and it looks like it might jeopardize wetlands. Could you possibly discuss this, please? I don't have all the details, but you guys are a lot smarter than I am. Could you say anything about it, please?
Wetlands legislation.
That could be possible. He might be talking about one of two things. It either could be the fish farm bill, or there's another bill that allows riparians to remove a certain number of cubic feet of material from the lakeshore, lake bottom in front of their frontage. I think it's, if I remember right, I maybe shouldn't throw a number out there, but I think it's 30 cubic feet a year. Pat, I know you worked on that one. Remember that one a little bit better?
I worked on the fish farm legislation more than that one, Dean. One of the main concerns in the fish farm bill, which eventually died and didn't go forward, was the idea that basically people with fish farming operations could do work in wetlands, you know, basically unregulated, and actually very similar lack of restraint that cranberry growers enjoy right now. So that was a big concern. And another concern I had with the fish farms was the fact that they're basically waterborne CAFOs, you know, the concentrated feeding operations. So that's the issue I worked on the most. I'd be lying if I said I was well versed on the how much soil and materials could be moved around. I'm not real up on that issue.
All right, there we go. John in Union Grove up next. Hi, John.
Yes, I'm here.
What's on your mind?
My mind is, where are the perch? I have fished for years and years, and I came back to Wisconsin, and I can't get
any more than 5 perch, and they're gone in Lake Michigan. Why cannot we restock them the same way they did in Ohio with walleye?
Stocking, and somebody else wondered about the health of Green Bay and if the perch are actually coming back. I know a perch fisherman in Green Bay wondered that as well. Dean, anything?
Green Bay is doing better than Lake Michigan. The perch fishing in Green Bay has actually kind of been coming along real, I won't say nicely, it's slowly maybe is a better description. But I know this winter I heard reports of guys doing better on Green Bay perch, both numbers and size. And why that would be different than on Lake Michigan, I couldn't exactly tell you. Whatever forces are at work on Lake Michigan probably aren't in Green Bay at the same level. And this has been, I don't know how long our caller's been gone, but he might have been gone for a few years because, boy, it seems like we've been working on Lake Michigan perch for probably 15 years. And I don't know that anybody's really found an answer on that one. Is anybody else, Tim or Pat?
Yeah, I was going to say, Dean, I remember working on the perch question on Lake Michigan back in the mid-90s, and it was a frustration then, and it's a frustration now. I mean, there's the concern that the question that pops up and the assumption that pops up all the time is the lake's ecosystem has changed dramatically ever since the zebra mussel and more lately the quagga mussels started basically covering the bottom of the lake. And I know our humans like to control things. We like to think we can go out there and manipulate nature and make everything well again, and sometimes we succeed. But I think the idea of trying to stock Lake Michigan with perch, I think it'd be futile. I mean, there's only so that's a huge body of water. It's basically an inland ocean, and so to think that we could ever stock enough perch up there to make people happy, that's a challenge for nature that we're seeing now. That if nature has a struggles to produce perch, I doubt we'll do much better out there.
Wow. Yeah, interesting way to look at it. Absolutely. Tim Isley, Pat Durkin, and Dean Bortz, our guests today, our outdoor writers on our roundtable on wildlife issues here in the state of Wisconsin. I'm Larry Mueller. Join in, 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Happy to have you along here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we take a look at environment and outdoor issues with our roundtable of writers. Tim Isley and Pat Durkin are both, they've been writing for a long, long time, freelance writers. Pat's also head of the Wisconsin Outdoor Communicators Association, or WOCA. And Dean Bortz, who is editor of Wisconsin Outdoor News. They are our guests, and we've dealt a lot with CWD. Probably want to get off that a little bit and talk about some other issues as well. And one of the kind of the nice things, I think, is the Wisconsin Conservation Hall of Fame is having its induction ceremonies in Stevens Point. And maybe, Tim, I'll turn to you on that one, because there are a couple of very worthy folks that are being inducted.
Right. Well, it all goes back to Wisconsin's conservation ethic, Larry. I mean, we are so fortunate, the people that have been in this state who have been leaders in conservation. And this Saturday, April the 30th at 9 o'clock, we'll have the induction ceremonies up at the Wisconsin Conservation Hall of Fame. And this year, we're going to be inducting two people, Noel Cutright and Leroy Lintier, and both who have been leaders. And, of course, Noel was on with you for public radio
for years.
So many years, yes. He was president of the Wisconsin Society for Ornithology, and he founded the River Edge Bird Club in Newburgh. He, I think, was the creator of the Bird City, Wisconsin program, which is now in over 90 communities in the state. He co-authored the very first Wisconsin Breeding Bird Atlas. I mean, he was a leader, and he was had worked for We Energies, but he did so many good things, and what an ornithologist he was. And then Leroy Lintier, who had been a wildlife manager with the Department of Natural Resources. I think he was there for over 30 years. He gave all sorts of lectures, and he used to write a column, I think, about called The Butterfly Man. But he was an expert also in wetlands, and some of his testimony basically was the basis of wetland protection in Wisconsin because of a court challenge that he testified at. We've been so lucky over the years. Last year we inducted, I think it was Gene Rourke and Ron Kosciuszczyk and David Ladd, who have been leaders in over the years. So that the Wisconsin Conservation Hall of Fame is in Stevens Point, and it's something that if this induction ceremony is open to the public, and if people would like to stop in and learn more about it, and they also can join that for, I think, $25. But, you know, we've got people going back to Aldo Leopold, John Muir, the leaders, Gordon McCrory, people that we've had in this state. We are so fortunate. And the Conservation Hall of Fame, I think, just sort of keeps that conservation ethic going. And so that's coming up this Saturday, and we're so fortunate.
Absolutely. And I just would mention the Natural Resources Foundation because it's the 30th anniversary, I believe, this year, and they raise a lot of money for public lands in the state.
You're right. This is the 30th anniversary. I'm fortunate to serve on the board of directors starting this year of the Natural Resources Foundation. And what they have done as far as donating money, and then they also give small conservation grants throughout the state of Wisconsin to help on projects. But their field trips, they've got 188 yeah. field trips around the state. So if somebody
really
wants to go out yeah, and ban trumpeter swans, or if they want to ban hawks, or if you want to go out and see a prairie, or if you want to go out and see some frogs or anything like that, these are going out throughout the spring, summer, and fall. And it's a great way for people. It's all about lifelong learning. And that's one of the things that I think is the key to all of us. We're interested in the outdoors, we're interested in the environment, but lifelong learning, that's what it's all about. And the Natural Resources Foundation is an excellent way to do that. So,
yeah. Pat, you ever go on one of those?
I'm going on my first one in July for trumpeter swans. And I just want to kind of expand on what Tim was saying, too, is the one great thing about Wisconsin that, you know, you see it, whether it's the Packers or our natural resources, is the passion we have in Wisconsin for our state. You know, I think all three of us, I'm sure, and you too, Larry, are Wisconsin chauvinists. We just really believe in our hearts that this is, you couldn't ask for a better state to live in. And I think that's one thing I really have come to love about doing an outdoor column for the last 30-some years, is that, you know, I get emails, I get letters, I get phone calls from people, and whether they agree or disagree, they really have a passion for this stuff. And it's cool to see when you walk through the Hall of Fame over in Stevens Point. I mean, some of us might not be all that thrilled to go to an induction ceremony and listen to speeches, but it is really humbling to walk through that Hall of Fame and go past and read these different plaques and the little biographies on the different people. And they, you know, the people in that Hall of Fame are folks from people you'd never heard of to like the real visionaries, like Tim said, Aldo Leopold. And I just can't help but get even more chauvinistic when I walk into those kind of places and think that someone and some group of people had the idea to have a Hall of Fame for our state. I mean, no other state has that, but we do here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, it's really wonderful.
So many of us that have Wisconsin DNA in our blood, and the conservation ethic has just run through for so many years. And the Conservation Hall of Fame started, I think the very first inductees back in 85 were John Muir and Aldo Leopold. And from there, people like Gaylord Nelson, Ernie Swift, Sigurd Olson, and Paul Olson, my grade school principal right here in Madison in Midvale School, Paul Olson. And these people were leaders, and we are so fortunate. If you watched on public TV last night about the national parks, and they talked about Teddy Roosevelt and how people set aside the land and cared for the environment, that is what we have here in Wisconsin, and that makes Wisconsin unique and different. And we're so pleased.
Yeah.
So privileged.
Absolutely. Well, we've got Larry and Ettrick with a question, so let's go there. Larry, thanks for waiting. Hello.
Hello. Yes, can I comment on the deer fencing, deer farms?
Okay.
Well, I don't think the double fence works because, like, during the rut, the bucks and the does get together. The bucks will tear up the fences, and then I've heard of reports where people actually cut open the fences because they don't want the deer locked up. I've heard of them throwing dogs with the deer. So, but my main point is that even double fencing on a farm doesn't keep the deer from getting together with those that have the CWD. The thing was, I was wondering, what about ticks? I don't think anybody mentioned wood ticks and deer ticks.
As a cause of CWD?
Yeah.
I'm not sure of any, I don't know of any research. Dean, do you offhand, do you know of any?
No, I am not aware of anything regarding ticks as far as a way to transfer CWD.
It's possible, but, you know, like with so many things with CWD, you name the various ways it could be spread. And yeah, they're all possibilities, and I think the one thing we should be asking ourselves as a society is, okay, we don't know how this disease is spreading, but what are we doing to learn about it? Are we putting any money into research to figure these things out? I think if there's one huge frustration we should all have with the current way we've been operating is that there's virtually no money going into research into this disease. As important as the information we need about this disease is, we are not doing anything to find out the information. You know, send graduate students out into the field to figure these things out and give us some answers, rule things out, and keep things in. Who knows? So, I mean, I won't rule out the possibility that there might be a way to transmit this disease through ticks, but honest to God, we don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Larry, thank you. Jeff in Portage, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I'd like to thank the three people you have on there for being the communicators they are. They really, over the years, dedicated themselves to keeping us people who love our natural resources informed. And without information, these three guys in particular are pretty good at it. I have a question. My question is about economics. I have seen our legislature in Wisconsin give grants to businesses that they want to attract to Wisconsin because businesses are going to have general revenues in excess of $1 billion a year. I have seen them give grants for good businesses and bad ones. I do not understand why we tend to ignore the economics of our natural resources. I think Larry just said something about no money for research. Well, in fact, what do we do to promote hunting, fishing, trapping, those things that are reliable sources of revenues for our state in the billions of dollars? And what is it you think we can do, you guys? We need to get our kids outside, and we need to generate the revenue to support our natural resources. We can't allow things to stay stagnant and decline. I'm just going to listen to the answer off the air.
Okay.
But thank you guys very much. I'm interested in what you have to say.
All right. Thank you, Jeff, for calling. Tim, I want to start with you.
Well, it's a really good question. The economics are so important, and hunting is a very big industry in this state, and we certainly need it. One of the things, and I don't know if this fits into what Jeff was saying or not, but I feel we definitely need a way for non-hunters, non-fishermen, to be able to support conservation in this state. If you look at how the Department of Natural Resources is funded, there's sort of, you've got the environmental side and you've got the fish game enforcement, traditional conservation side. The environmental side is general taxes, but the other side is supported by segregated fees, the hunting licenses, the stamps, the duck stamps, the pheasant stamps, the Pittman-Robertson money that comes back after the sale of arms and ammunition. These things are what's funding our programs. What we need is a way for the non-hunter, the non-fisherman, to be able to support these programs, because the conservation warden who's out there helping to find out if somebody did something illegal in a wetland or did something to a hawk or an eagle, that person, that conservation warden, is funded through licensed dollars. And I've proposed in the past a conservation license, which would allow somebody to, in essence, nothing, but they could pay the money and would go into the Fish and Game Fund, and for somebody who doesn't want to buy a hunting license or a fishing license, they could contribute that way. So I think we have much more in common than differ. Those who hunt, those who don't hunt, we've got to be together working on the habitat problems and solving the problems that we have now. We've got to have to have both of us together. But I think by having the non-hunters, the non-fishermen involved in funding these programs, because wildlife and natural resources belong to all of us. There's no doubt about that. Have them funding, I think that would be a help.
Yeah.
I could jump in here next, Larry.
Go ahead, Dean.
All right. Well, so first of all, I just want to say it wasn't me who paid Jeff to call in and say what he did about us initially. Either been Tim or Patrick, so you look at those guys first. But going on to Jeff's question, Jeff must be a thinker. That's a good question. Not an easy answer by any means. And I don't know that this is the right one. But we've talked about it before. It's come up again more recently, and it's some fraction of 1% of a sales tax that funds hunting, fishing, trapping, and not just those areas, but the research that goes behind it. It's worked in Missouri for probably, I'm guessing, 25 to 30 years now, because I remember back in the day when Bob Ellingson was chairman of the Conservation Congress, Bob traveled to Missouri. Not to find out whether the program worked, but about how that state got it implemented, how they got their citizens to support it and vote for it.
You know, and at this point, I'm going to break right in. We'll take that back up after we take a look at the news and weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Net, and then we'll be back with our guests. You stay with us. Happy to have you along here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we take a look at nature and wildlife issues in Wisconsin with our roundtable of writers, Dean Bortz, editor of Wisconsin Outdoor News, Pat Durkin, freelance writer and editor, president of the Wisconsin Outdoor Communicators Association, and Tim Isley, full-time freelance outdoor writer and photographer. These three have had a lot of experience with natural resource issues here in the state, and it's great to have them along for this roundtable. You can join in again, 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Just as we were breaking for the news, I almost said breaking for lunch, but we weren't breaking for lunch, we were breaking for the news. We had a question about how do we fund and how do we get more dollars into research and our improving our wildlife situation in the state. And I know Tim talked about getting involvement of non-hunters in helping financially support our natural resources. And then Dean was talking as we were kind of breaking about possible a portion of a percent for a sales tax, Dean.
Right. It's a program that's been used in Missouri successfully for probably 25 to 30 years. Minnesota adopted it more recently. It's not exactly like Missouri's, but pretty similar to that. Minnesota's funds a broader base of activities in that state beyond just natural resources stuff, but a lot of it, a large percentage of that sales tax is focused on Minnesota's outdoors. And basically it kind of works like Minnesota or Missouri's is 1/8 of 1% of sales tax goes directly to game and fish funds. And some of it is work on the ground, might be habitat work, might be wetland restoration, and some of it goes to research. And some of it also funds positions for that type of work. And with that, they've had, we've always done it on our end here through license fee hikes. And it's been a while since we've had a license fee hike in Wisconsin, and maybe it's time for something like that again, too. But in Missouri, they can keep their license fees stable because they have this 1/8 of 1% sales tax coming in every year.
Oh, interesting. Well, those are, I think, some really good ideas. And but is there political will to do something like that?
Exactly.
There was a lot of will back in, Tim and Pat, I'm sure both of you guys remember this. There was a lot of will within the hunting and fishing community at the time that Bob Ellingson tried to get it into the state. And I know that he had a committee that worked on it, and it was Conservation Congress effort. They did a lot of work. And I'm trying to remember who the chairman of that committee was that worked on that project. But, you know, so on the ground, within the ranks, yes, there was a lot of will, but it never quite made it, never spread outside of the hunting, fishing, trapping community.
I think there was a time back when I believe Jim Baumgart was chair of one of the committees, and he had a proposal similar to that, and I think it died in committee. So it certainly is a good idea, and we just need citizens to approach their legislators and say, hey, we need this for natural resources in the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of that discussion coming up again. I was asked about it within the last 2 weeks. A couple of folks asked me about it and what I thought about the idea. I said, well, it's not a new one. I can give you all the background on it you want. Use that history or background to take your current effort and go ahead with it. So whether this moves forward very quickly at all or to any degree, we'll wait and see. But there are folks who are aware of it again and are kind of thinking about it.
Ralph in Townsend has been waiting a bit, so let's go there. Ralph, thanks for waiting. Hi.
Thank you very much for allowing me to be on your program.
Sure.
I'd like to really send out a good message to the people listening to this and people that read Wisconsin Outdoor News. These three people that you have on your show are probably the most informative people within the state, and they keep every Wisconsin sportsman up to date on current issues, legislation, environmental options, and they're just all around professional, great people. Two comments I'd like to make. First of all, I've been listening to your program this morning, and we're addressing issues all the way from CWD to double fencing for deer on game farms, and the legislators who have the deal to the ability to make the decisions on this are not being heard by the Wisconsin sportsmen and environmental people. We all sit back and let somebody else do it, but if we could encourage people to get more to their legislators and tell them exactly what they have on their mind, give them some information, some ammunition to address some of these legislative issues that we're facing, that would really be a big help, and we'd get a lot more done. And my last thing I'd like to say is a comment, and Dean just touched on it barely. It's been 8 years since we've have an increase in hunting, fishing, and trapping license in this state. We've lost millions of dollars, lost many people in programs that we needed to get developed to move forward to ensure that we can keep the hunting, fishing, and trapping community and the resources involved. And the most important thing without this fee is we have restricted the actions of the Wisconsin game warden to have lost many hours and time available to travel the state to cover our natural resources with the lack of this fee increase. And with that, I'll listen to any comments.
I would certainly agree with Ralph that we need to have people contact their legislators to tell them that natural resources is important and that we need the people and the budgets and also a license fee increase. It's probably about time for something like that. I would like to see legislation that would increase the license fees in addition to that, have something for the non-hunter, for the non-fisherman, so that they could do something to pay for something that would go into it. And I think years ago the Congress had a position that they wanted to see they wouldn't mind an increase, but they wanted everybody to be able to help foot the bill because everybody benefits from natural resources. So Ralph's idea, I think, has a lot of merit.
Yeah. Pat, comment from you?
Yeah, I like the idea of what Dean and Tim have been talking about, but I also know when we've looked at voluntary ways of doing this where you get, not necessarily voluntary, but I remember a few years ago you had Tom Heberlein on your show, Larry, talking about raising money, getting people, non-hunters involved, non-anglers involved, by paying a fee for, like, bird feed, putting a little tax on bird feed. And as you probably recall, he got his head caved in.
Yeah.
You know, you talk about putting a registration fee on someone's canoe or taxing their bird feed, and right away you get a real strong pushback. And I guess I always find that interesting because I think, you know, the attitude seems to be that, well, we're not taking anything from the environment, so why should we be penalized for that? You know, and they look at taxes. Americans look at taxes as penalties, basically. And one thing I always find interesting about the hunting and fishing community is that I think at its core, it's a pretty conservative group of people, but yet they're typically willing to pay for fish and wildlife conservation programs. And yet the people who you expect to get more help from them typically resist it. And it always comes back to the basic fact that in our society, it's democracy. If you do not make these things an issue with your legislative people, your representatives, it won't go anywhere. And so they're a knight in Waupaca here when these guys were all complaining about the idea of an antlerless-only season. The one guy at the end finally stood up and said, look, if you don't like these options, don't yell at the DNR. Call your legislators tomorrow and put the onus on them. How many of you will do that? And, of course, the room just sat there silently. Mm-hmm. You know, so to me, I really believe in democracy. I don't think there's a better system out there. You look around the world, I think, well, who'd tribute we have for that? But yet we have gotten complacent, and I think it's time for people to start realizing ultimately, it's our responsibility as individual citizens to do something about it.
Yeah. There we go. And again, Ralph, I thank you for your comments. Appreciate it very much. We have other issues to look at, too. Antonio and Madison up next. Hi, thanks for calling.
Thanks for having me on. Let me just kind of reflect what a lot of people said. It's a shame that the DNR has been politicized to the point that it's almost trying to do a job with his hands tied behind his back, and it's a sad thing. That said, let me get to my point, or at least my question. There was a recent incident where a dog owner took a couple dogs out to a public hunting area, and was shot. Now, a couple things for me as someone that enjoys the outdoors. I think leaving a dog untethered in a hunting zone is a really bad idea. But having said that, I think there's a discourse that's missing. I think a lot of dog owners have the idea that they just can go out there with their dog, let them run loose, and then somehow, you know, when something happens, you know, they're all about, well, what a bad hunter that is. So I guess my thoughts are, is there a way that this can be in a public discussion where dog owners need to understand what's going on? And then, of course, you know, hunters need to understand what's going on. And then there comes the issue that, well, who has the rights to that land and how is it used? And then, i.e., somebody just pointed out previously that maybe dog owners should need to pay, unless they do, some sort of fee to use the land itself. So I think it's a potential problem where there's more and more dog owners coming out into public land, and yet I don't know what the DNR can do or if there's any kind of forum that can be raised so dog owners really understand what's going on, and you know, how do we address that? So I'll just listen on to see what your comments are.
All right, thanks, Antonio, for calling. Tim, start with you.
Well, I don't know a lot about that individual case. I have read some things about it, so I, you know, don't have firsthand knowledge about it. But it all comes down to, again, sharing public land. I mean, there's responsibilities on both people. And obviously, if you're going to go out and run your dog, and as I understood, in this case, I think the owner had a blaze orange collar or something on their dog. The person who was supposedly coyote hunting, as I understand, shot the dog by accident. And I think it violates the rules of safe hunting, gun safety, you know, tab K, know your target. And if you're not sure it's a coyote, then you don't shoot if it's during legal shooting hours. But so both parties, I mean, people who are non-hunters use public lands the same as hunters and other outdoorsmen. So the impetus is on both to share the land. But as a hunter, you have a special responsibility. You can't recall that bullet once you pull the trigger. You have to be sure of your target. So I think that's a very... So I don't know what's happened in that case. I haven't heard whether a ticket was issued, and I'll be anxious to find out about that.
Dean, a comment from you?
Sure. Yeah, Tim covered a good part of it there. The only thing I think I would add is that the gentleman asked a question about what can the DNR do to prevent stuff like this. Well, I don't think we can expect a government or agency to be able to make rules that solve every possible situation that could come up. At some point, people have to use common sense. And I don't know whether there was common sense lacking in this situation, but I'm sure there were rules in place. I know that the game wardens investigated the situation and didn't cite anybody. So does it come down to, you know, is it fair to call it an unfortunate situation and leave it at that? Probably not. But I think it comes back to common sense, and, you know, if people just use their head, I think we could solve a lot of these things that come up.
Mm-hmm. Well, Rich in Two Rivers has something for us, too. Rich, hi. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I kind of diverted my point a little bit, but your last guest, Ralph, that was on the phone, and your guest were talking about raising fees.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just bought my Iowa fishing license, my Minnesota fishing license, my Texas fishing license, my Virginia fishing license, and the last thing I want is to pay more for fees. And we're not a microcosm of where we're supposed to be. There's people outside of Wisconsin that are coming here. But being that said, I'm going on to my next point. My point is I'm proud to be from Wisconsin. We have the greatest people here in the United States. I just did a 3-month stint down in Granbury, Texas. And it's a town that's just south of Fort Worth. And it was created back in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s to be a resort town for retirees from megatropolis area to still be within their family range. And what happened was, due to fracking, they lowered the water level on a lake that they created down there. And when they did that, they lowered the property values of the lake. And the people are selling their houses for next to nothing because they're still paying the same property taxes to the basically to the oil companies. And Wisconsin wouldn't let that happen. That's why I'm proud to be from Wisconsin.
Hmm. Well, thanks a lot for calling. Pat, any comment?
Well, I'm not so certain that Wisconsin wouldn't allow that kind of thing to happen, at least not in the current situation we're in. So, you know, like right just south of me, we have this great sands region where people have properties down there on what were pretty nice little lakes. But in recent years, the water tables have dropped as we pump more water out, and now there's the constant effort to pump even more water out in these big, high-capacity wells. So I'm not certain we're doing all we can to protect our groundwater. And I always go back to, you know, a comment my dad made years ago when we had one of these big fights about high-capacity wells and Perrier coming in and pumping our water out. Was, you know, Dad's comment was, you know, people always talk about oil, but you get right down to it, we always need water more than we need oil. We've always found a way to heat ourselves and survive as a species, but we don't survive as a species without good quality water. So I guess I'm really hopeful that we can use some common sense here when it comes to regulation and not let this get out of hand worse than it is right now.
Yeah, good, well said. Appreciate it. Rich, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Mike in Madison has something for us. Hi, Mike.
Good afternoon. Here's some ideas for raising some money. I'm an avid hunter, and I use the trail system a lot here in northern and southern Wisconsin. And I've noticed that there's so many areas. I use an example in Dane County, Nassau County, Iowa County, Crawford County, basically every county along the Wisconsin River, lower Wisconsin State Riverway, Mazamani, and Blackhawk areas, there are no trails open to, well, very few trails open to bicycles. Now, Wisconsin being an insane bicyclist state, I think we could have a fee to allow bicyclists on a lot more of the trails and get a lot more money from that. Also, there's so many islands along the Wisconsin River that people would love to camp on. You could allow public camping on some of the islands and charge fees or a license for that. That'd be a huge money. There's plenty of options out there if we're willing to look into some, opening it up to some more people. And one side note also is I would like to thank everyone in the DNR for doing such a fantastic job with such an terrible, terrible budget and tiny budget that they have to work with.
Mike, thanks a lot. Dean, a comment?
Let me go back to the gentleman who was buying licenses in every other state but didn't want to increase here. The one thing that he talked about was that he was very proud of being from Wisconsin and talked about that, the people that we have here in the state. And it sort of ties into what Tim said earlier about our conservation ethic. The one thing I just wanted to mention is that doing what I do for as long as I've done it, I have run across just tons of people who are willing to throw their spare time and money into getting projects done in their area. I don't know how many volunteer or conservation groups we have in the state. We have a lot. And without those folks, for as much as the DNR gets done with its budget that it has, there's these people out there working on behalf of natural resources, trying to augment whatever the DNR does, and they're doing one heck of a job in their volunteer capacity, just doing whatever they can to get things done for the state.
Well, that's a great point. Thank you so much. And, you know, boy, we're actually running out of time. This 90 minutes is going a lot faster. It always goes pretty fast. But I wish it would. I wish we had a little bit more time. Any last issue that you want to bring up, or we got one more minute, roughly. Tim Isley, let's.
Well, just very, very quickly. I hope that someday we'll see some legislation that will allow the Natural Resources Board to appoint the secretary of the DNR. And I hope that we'll see something as far as an increase in some of our license fees and allowing non-hunters to participate. Something really new that just came up was the new change in the managed forest law. I just mentioned very briefly, there's a couple of people with the Wisconsin Alliance of Forest Owners who were really active and were able to get that law changed and really benefit people who own woodlands. And I think it's going to be a great thing for woodland ownership in the state of Wisconsin. So, but it's an example of people who were avid and who really went on behalf of woodlands. So,
yeah, well, very good point. Dean and Pat, in 30 seconds.
Pat, go ahead first.
Yeah, I just want to say that I agree with what Tim was just saying about this managed forest crop law. I think so many people came on and they're bashing it right away, but you look at the typical person who owns woodlands in Wisconsin, they are not rich people. The rich people don't need these kind of programs, but the people of more modest income, they will be benefiting from this.
And Dean, we're going to have to wait for next time we're on together for you because we're out of time.
Right, Dean, on the show.
It's been a lot of fun. Dean, thank you so much. And Pat and Tim.
Thank you.
It's been wonderful. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Tim Isley and Pat Durkin are freelance writers. Dean Bortz is editor of Wisconsin Outdoor News. And there are a lot of areas that we didn't get to on the show. And so we're going to try and get him back, and we'll do this again. And thank you very much for listening, by the way. Tomorrow we're going to take a look at a whole different topic, antiques and appraisals on our mind tomorrow. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Please stay with us on the Ideas Network.